Mr. John Robert Stokes, side one.
I'm John Robert Stokes, and I was born on the 29th of March 1917 in a little village of Halsall near Woking in Surrey. I'm the youngest of seven children. My father started work as a farm labourer and graduated to a gardener, and my mother, before marriage, was a children's nurse. It's interesting that they did in fact meet in Woking when they came to work there, because Woking was a new town at the turn of the century. I went to the local elementary Church of England village school. I left at the age of 14 and got a job as a grocery shop assistant in a local village. Later on, I was employed running a travelling shop for animal feeds round the villages surrounding surrounding Woking. I was anxious about my further career, having only an elementary education, and so I took a correspondence course for the civil service. But I was not unable to complete the course before being called up for military service. It became apparent during 1938 and 39 that there was going to be a world war, because Hitler and his allies were seeking to expand in Europe. I was quite interested in the armament. Some excitement, really. It seemed as though it was going to be all very exciting and quite, and would get us out of a rut. So when, after war broke out, I volunteered for the Royal Air Force, mainly, I think, because they had a better uniform and obviously better life than the army. But lots of other fellows had the same idea, I guess, because I was turned down. I was also courting. I was engaged to be married, and not pleased at the thought of call-up. But it was going to be inevitable, and I was, in fact, called up for the infantry. And like my fellow in similar circumstances, I accepted it as inevitable, with little realization of the effect on the personal life. As it was a call up on the, I was called up for military service on the 16th of March 1940. We had no choice of what job we were going to do, and we carried on and accepted as things came along. I started my home service, which in fact was very short, by being told to report for training at the Kingston Barracks. Now, the Kingston Barracks is the depot of the East Surrey Regiment, and it was quite a severe shock to my system. And at the time of call-up, I was told, in fact, that I was being called up into the Queen's Royal Regiment, which is, in fact, the West Surrey Regiment. So it was rather odd that we were trained with the East Surreys. I found that it was quite a shock to the system. There was a lack of privacy, and everything seemed to be done in a rush. I think I was used to a more leisurely approach to life, and we just had to get on with it. We might have been out on the square doing rifle drill, then we were hustled into the huts and told to get trained for physical training, and there just didn't seem time to get all these things in. But the actual length of home service training was very much shortened, because shortly after arriving at Kingston Barracks we were told that we were going to be posted overseas to a battalion of the Queen's Royal Regiment then serving in the Middle East. So we were all quite bewildered, but we just got caught up in the system. Now, because we were going overseas, we were told we were going to have a week's embarkation leave before leaving this country. Now, as I was engaged to be married, and we were planning to get married in 1940, on my embarkation leave I was married by special license at the parish church in Horsell, Woking, on the 15th of October 1940, whilst on the embarkation leave prior to going to the Middle East. Now, I'm explaining this now because the fact that I was married affected my outlook on the whole business of going into the army, going abroad, and it lent a unreal feel about the whole business. Yeah, I got a little bit muddled there, but I think it. So after our embarkation leave, we went back to Kingston Barracks, and we had a period of field training in Richmond Park, about 9 days, and then in May 1940, we were put on trains and sent up to Liverpool with the idea of embarking for the Middle East. When we got to Liverpool, we were told that as Italy had come into the war, we could no longer go to the Middle East via the Mediterranean Sea, but other means would have to be sought. So we were put into a camp on Aintree Racecourse. When we got there, we met up with other detachments due to join the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's Royal Regiment, who had been trained in other regimental depots, and together we made a force of about 200. We were, from then on, known as a Middle East intake for the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's Royal Regiment. The officers were newly trained, but the NCOs were mostly regular army reservists who had been recalled to the colours to escort us to the Middle East. Now, because the our sailing was cancelled, we were used as a local defence force to guard Liverpool Bay, and we were also given the job of guarding civil German internees in a large camp, prison camp, which had been set up. Eventually we got the orders to move, and it was on August Bank Holiday 1940 that we sailed down the Mersey. By now, sort of, we accepted the inevitable, but personally it was very emotional leaving a newly married wife and the rest of my family. We had no special lectures or information about it. It was all done as a matter of fact. No send-off. It was just do this, do that, and we just followed on like a lot of sheep, I guess. The voyage was quite pleasant once we were clear of Europe, but we weren't too sure what was happening, because once we left Liverpool we sailed due west, obviously to get us out of the way of U-boats and whatever. But once out in the mid-Atlantic we turned south, and our first port of call was Freetown, Sierra Leone. There we didn't go ashore, we just stayed and took on water. But we did dock in Cape Town in South Africa, and the reception we had was really wonderful. On our first day in port we had to tidy ourselves up. We did a showing the flag march around the town and back on board. But the second day we were allowed a leave pass, and when we got outside the dock gates we found that there were cars lined up with mostly English-speaking South Africans, and as we came out we were invited to join the various parties in the car, and we were taken out, taken to their homes, and really given a nice time. When we arrived in Egypt, we weren't very impressed with the natives. They either ignored us or begged and sold to us. But we didn't get to know natives whatsoever. Now my overseas service was quite extensive. I had two spells. First, I was away for 4 years and 5 months, firstly in the Middle East, followed by a spell in the Far East. And the second period was 10 months, and that was in Europe after the war had ended. So the conditions of the overseas service was varied quite considerably. Generally, the lifestyle was basic, varying from positively dangerous to boring. Sanitation was poor to filthy, particularly in the Middle East and the Far East. Food was poor but mostly adequate. Highlights were brief spells of leave, and conditions were much better in Europe. But I found the worst aspect of overseas service was the lack of contact with family and home, and the uncivilizing nature of war service overseas. Now, to come back to my arrival in Egypt, which was September 1940, we arrived at the Red Sea port of Egypt, and we were sent into a large concentration camp or reinforcement camp, whichever one likes to term it, and waiting there to move to the front line, which was then in the western desert, and to join the 2nd Battalion of the Queens. Now the situation in the Middle East at that stage was that Italy had a colony on the North African coast called Libya, and when the war went bad before us in Europe, they seized the opportunity to declare war and thought they could overrun the Egypt and take the Suez Canal, which at that stage was being defended by British troops because of a national agreement with the Egyptians. So he attacked with a fairly large army in the western desert, west of Egypt, and he got on quite well. We had a very small force there. We fell back to a line at Mirza Matru, and there we held them. Now, that was the position when I joined the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's. We were in a trench system similar to the Great War, across the main road up the desert and the railway line, so we were in a sort of a defensive position. Now, our job in the infantry was obviously to attack the enemy and to occupy ground, and we started going out on patrols to test the strength of the enemy, and the living conditions were appalling. We were subject to sandstorms and poor food, but we got on with it. Now, about December, we were marched off one night, and we marched for about 9 days at night, right round in an arc, and we attacked the first Italian defensive position at Sidi Barrani. Now, that was my first experience of going into action. I wondered what my reaction would be to fixing bayonets and going in, but quite frankly, I was more bothered about my sore feet and aching legs. Okay, right, I'm right. Of course, we were all very scared when we were first off. We were shelled, and I was sort of, we were going forward, sort of, we're all spread out across the desert like ships at sea, and then of course when the shells began to fall, the idea was you lay down, but if you lay down, you make a bigger target than you are actually when you're standing up. But I was sort of laying down, and the shells were falling amongst us, and the idea was you lay down in the sand with your helmet on the back of your head, and I felt a ping on my steel helmet, you see, and I thought, oh dear, what was that? And I saw a piece of metal in front of me, and I went to pick it up, and it was red hot. And I thought to myself, oh dear, if it had fallen a bit lower down, it would have fallen on in my back, or lower down still. It was sort of odd that was the first sign of action. Of course I was scared, everybody was scared. They didn't always admit it, but, and yet it was an interesting experience. It was something that was happening for the first time. We'd been trained, sort of, to kill other people, but it was all so odd, absolutely strange. And my emotional feeling was the fact that I was hungry, I was thirsty, my legs were aching, and my feet were killing me, and I thought how nice it would be to be in a comfortable bed. But anyway, we had a job to do, and it worked out quite well for us, because when we went advanced on the Italian positions, they put their hands up and said, and they'd obviously were as ground off as we were, and they had no fight left in them. We took an awful lot of prisoners there, and that was their next job, to look after these prisoners, whilst other troops got on with the action. Now, we continued to advance up the desert. The next objective was a town called Bardia, quite a big town by Middle East standards, and a big garrison of about 40,000 Italian troops in there. And we spent Christmas 1940 in defensive positions, and we were patrolling around the perimeter to test out the strengths of the defences. I think our Christmas dinner was corned beef and biscuits, as usual. Nothing very brilliant. But then we were told that other troops would come through us and do the attack. Now, it so happened that these troops were Australians, and they duly moved up through us and attacked Bardia. And so we thought, that's it, they've taken over now we can go back to have a good rest. But it wasn't to be, because the Australians, when they'd attacked the town, they'd found a large quantity of brandy and liquor, and they proceeded to get well and truly. And we were summoned quickly back into the line, where we had to go in and take over and look after the prisoners and wait for the Australians to sober up and to get on with the job. So that is what they did, and we stayed in the line, and our job was twofold. Firstly, to take care of a larger number of prisoners, but the sadder thing was, in fact, we had to bury the dead. We had to go around, find bodies, some in tanks which weren't very pleasant, and the graves were buried and marked, and that was just part of our job. Then we had done our stint on that one, so we went to a little seaside place called Saloon, and an old merchant ship came in, and we said, what's that for? We said, well, we're going aboard, you see, we are going back down to the canal zone in this ship. And so, how are we going to get aboard? Oh, we're going to climb those rope ladders. And on our backs we had the big pack containing overcoats and whatever, rifle, and we had to clamber up the side of this ship, and that was one of the most frightening experiences you could possibly have, because the boat was rocking and the ladder was banging against the ship, and we thought we were going to fall off. But anyway, we made it, and we got back to the canal zone, went into a reinforcement camp, and eventually we were sent on a week's leave in Cairo. Now, that was really wonderful. We were able to have baths, we were able to have some good food. Our accommodation was the barracks that was occupied by the Coldstream Guards on garrison duties, because there wasn't enough accommodation in hotels and whatever for the rank and file. So virtually we were into the barracks, and though we were virtually on leave. But my friends and I, we went out to the pyramids, and we had some nice food, and we went into and had a haircut and whatever, and really speaking, it was just like being in heaven, but it lasted too quickly. Now, a lot of people, when they hear about fellows going abroad, they think, oh, the first thing they'll they'll think about is the dusky maidens and the drinking and general making a nuisance of oneself. But everyone to their own taste, and I found, and we automatically made friends with those people, those fellows who were of like mind. I was married, I had no question of being unfaithful to my wife. I was more interested in getting a little bit of civilization, cleanliness, and seeing a few films and so on. And I know the fellows went down the brothels. There was a street called Burka Street in Cairo, which was a notorious place, and we did in fact go and have a look at it. But if anybody had any doubts about the merits of that sort of life, they were quickly killed by reasonably fellows who were thinking that way. So yes, the leave was nice, but it was so unreal. And I can remember being in the cinema, I think on their last day, and we were completely immersed in this film, and I can't remember the film itself, but I know we were completely immersed. But all of a sudden we realised, tomorrow we're back. And that's when it hit us. But back we went. Okay? Now, when we got back from leave, we went into camp, and the battalion then reverted to peacetime soldiering. In other words, we cleared an area of desert of stones, and we set up an ordinary barrack square. And then we had to do ceremonial parades, which consisting of bringing the whole of the battalion together. Now, a battalion is approximately round about 800 men. It's made up of four rifle companies and then a headquarters company of specialists such as signalers, transport and so on. When a battalion is in a peacetime situation, you find that the regimental sergeant major, who is the senior warrant officer of the regiment, will bring discipline to bear on the whole of the battalion, and the way that's done are these parades. So invariably we had a commanding officer's parade where we formed up in companies. We marched around, no bands. I never marched behind a band in the whole of my service. Nevertheless, we got to know what a battalion looked like. Because when we had first joined the battalion, all we were brought off the ship, into the camp, up and joined a small section. And that's the only section of the battalion you saw. But the parades we did, and the feeling that we'd done a job of work, gave us pride in our regiment, and that's what it really was all about, and that's what makes it work. Okay. Now, our next job, that somebody in the government decided that we were going to occupy the island of Rhodes. I think his name was Churchill, and he was a great fan of the Greeks and Greek mythology and so on, and so he had a thing about helping the Greeks. So we were going to go off and retake the island of Rhodes, which had been captured by the Italians, and to do that we did some training on the Bitter Lakes, which connect different bits of the Suez Canal, when we did assault landing from landing boats. So we were trained to do that, and we were busy doing that, and all of a sudden there was a panic. A chap by the name of Rommel had come into the desert, and Germans were going to put a bit of backbone into the Italians, and they'd come down the desert, and so we had to go along back into action again. So anyway, they were held on their old line. We'd lost all, because after our episode in Bari and so on, the other troops had gone quite a long way up the desert. But again, Mr. Churchill, he wanted to help the Greeks, so he'd withdrawn.